Buenos dias, mis amigos, y bienvenidos a el podcast Lord Some Things. Jesus Christ. And right out of the chute, I'm an idiot. Hey, thanks for joining us, all of you, person. And welcome to Loathsome Things, a horror movie podcast. My name is John, and if you listen to the show, you already know that. And with me, as always, is Josh, who you also might know. Josh, how's things in your world?
Bellegrafo.
Yeah. La plume de ma tante.
Oh, yes.
So what the fuck in the living fuck are we doing here today? What movie are we talking about, Josh?
Well, John, as you so kindly chose, as a digestif after what we all just went through together collaboratively, you decided to treat us to a little something special. It's our first ever anthology film, and it's quite a doozy. It's the 2022 anthology film Satanic Hispanics.
Yes. Los Hispanicos Satanicos? I don't know. I'm an idiot.
It's something along those lines.
Satanic Hispanics.
Yeah.
A four segment with a wraparound, a reach around.
Yeah.
Anthology, comedy horror anthology. Of course, you would have already watched this, audience people, because we told you to. But if you didn't, that's what it is. And you should go check it out. I thought it was a cool movie.
Yeah.
I found it pretty entertaining. Obviously, as like all anthologies, some segments are better than others. Given how many, you know, all the VHS ones and the ABCs of Death, you know, there's some of them are great, some of them are total shit, and then the wraparound story is often part of the problem. I thought in this case it was fine. I liked the use of Pedro from Napoleon Dynamite.
Yes. Efren Ramirez.
Yes, his overacting was fantastic. A couple of the segments were genius, you know, and a couple of them, I didn't think any of them were bad, but a couple of them were, like, really choice.
Yeah.
And it flowed pretty quickly, I think. Having four segments with that another segment length of wraparound stuff in between, I think it worked pretty well.
Yeah, that is a good point. I didn't even think about that, like. The frame narrative of a lot of these anthology films aren't always great. And in some of them, like the ABCs of Death, it basically just doesn't even exist. But with this one, it's like a critical part of it, kind of, at points. And it was a really good, really well done. They even like signaled at the very beginning that it's going to be, you know, half horrific, half funny. Which it exactly was, and I thought it was great. I do feel like the problem with this movie is it starts off really strong, and then it kind of like peters out. Like, I feel like they were like, let's put the best one in front, the second best one behind that, and then I don't know, we'll see how it goes from there.
Yeah, the worst one after that.
Yeah,
and then we'll at least get pretty funny after that.
Yeah, exactly.
The guy that I guess is primarily responsible for getting this project off the ground is Mike Mendez. He is a director, writer who he made Big Ass Spider and did a segment from the Tales of Halloween anthology. There you go with the anthologies.
Yeah.
It was an idea that he was talking to somebody about what he wanted to do with his next movie, and you know, he wanted to do, I forget what it was he said to the guy, but the other guy was like, Satanic Hispanics, as a joke. And then he was like, wait, that's a brilliant idea. And so it was literally just like a joke that was so stupid that they were like, oh yeah, we know we have to make this. And so that was kind of the birth of it in very oversimplified form. But yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. There's some interviews out there with like all the guys and some of the guys. There's one lady. Otherwise, there's some luminaries in here. Demian Rugna from Argentina, who we've already covered his When Evil Lurks, which was a fine, fine film. He also made Terrified. He's got the first segment, Tambien Lo Vi. What else we got? We got Eduardo Sanchez, who is part of the directing team that created the Blair Witch Project, which is pretty fucking that's awesome.
Awesome.
He did some directing on the Mexican soap opera narco drug crazy series called Queen of the South that my wife watched, so I watched some of it with her. It's actually pretty entertaining, but very nice. Very telenovela-ish. So he did some of that. He had a segment on VHS2. He's done episodes of Yellow Jackets, Supernatural, Fantasy Island. Then we have Gigi Saul Guerrero, who is a Mexican-Canadian, an interesting mix there. She did a segment of VHS 85, but she primarily is an actress. And she's had a lot of little bit parts here and there. So she's really just kind of getting into directing, I guess. And I mean, I think she did a decent job, but hers was definitely my least favorite, unfortunately.
Oh, was hers Nahuales?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it just didn't, we'll get into it. And then there's Alejandro Brugues, I'm guessing it's pronounced. He's from Argentina as well. And by the way, her segment was called Nahuales. Yeah, Eduardo Sanchez was the vampire. And then Brugues, his section was called The Hammer of Zanzibar, which is fucking hilarious. He directed Juan of the Dead, a segment from an anthology called Nightmare Cinema, and a segment from ABCs of Death. So a lot of all anthology people, some who have also done feature work as well. An interesting assortment of people. I think they were for the most part well chosen.
Yep.
For the most part. Really, the only person of note in this movie as far as acting, I thought, was Efren Ramirez. I'm not even sure I recognized anyone else in the movie, and there were so many people in it, I didn't even bother looking any of them up, because I was just like, it's like a rabbit hole.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, there's a lot in here. There are two others of note for me. One was Greg Grunberg, he's the white guy detective. He mm-hmm. was the, like, shitty dad cop in the TV show Heroes who could see the future.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, wow. I never watched that show, but yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't very good. Yeah.
Yeah, like, the guy that played the vampire seemed familiar to me, and I did see some of Queen of the South, which he was also on. So maybe that's where I saw him, but his name is Hemke Madera, which I thought was interesting.
That is a good one.
He was also in The Mandalorian.
Oh.
And then his lady, Mira Bell, was played by an actress named Patricia Velasquez. She was in The Curse of La Llorona, which I saw.
Nice.
And the crappy Mummy and The Mummy Returns. And apparently she had a small role, a relatively small role, on Arrested Development. So,
oh, figure. Neat. Random.
Yeah, so she's been around. Yeah, she's been around since at least the 90s, and, you know, and I believe she's, I can't remember where she's from, but anyways, yeah, so that was cool, but that was about as far as I went with looking up the actors, because I didn't want to.
Yeah, yeah, the only other one in here that's worth noting is Jonah Ray. He's the main character of The Hammer of Zanzibar, and I really don't appreciate his screen presence even a little bit, so as soon as I saw him pop up at the beginning of that segment, I was like, oh no. And the segment is perfectly fine. It's just everything about it is a little bit worse because Jonah Ray is the one doing it.
So are you familiar with him? Like what he's other stuff he's done?
Yeah, he was the new host for Mystery Science Theater 3000 when they brought it back in recent years. And it's just not good. That specific show has kind of like the unholy trinity of people that nerds are told they appreciate. And yeah, mm-hmm. he was just the big, like, right up in your face on all of it. And I just didn't enjoy his element of it, but it was a fine short despite his presence.
Yeah, that's true. He got some good lines. Not that he, you know, knocked them out of the park necessarily, but all he had to do was say them, and they were pretty fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
good for him.
Yeah. Good job, Jonah Ray's agent.
Yeah, the only person in that segment that stands out is the guy that runs the store. That guy's fucking hilarious.
Yes, I love that guy. Oh, such good timing on everything. All right, the movie opens. The El Paso police are raiding a coyote warehouse full of dead people. They comically keep shooting a dead body because the arm is cuffed to something that's moving, so they keep seeing his begunned hand move and shoot him full of bullets. It turns out that something that he's cuffed to is the Traveler. He starts to chop off his hand to escape the cuff, but the police get him, and he is then brought into an interrogation room to be questioned by two fat detectives for the length of this anthology's entire frame narrative. He's like Johnny Cash, he's been everywhere, man, but the everywhere that he's been is like all of the places in North Central and South America, but from before they get their current names, basically. And he tells them that something's after him and he needs to get out of here or else a bad thing is going to happen. And he then starts telling them stories about people that he's met when he's been everywhere, man. Enter the first segment. Tambien lo vi. Gustavo waves his phone flashlight in some kind of eldritch pattern in his dark house, but the pizza delivery helmet doesn't seem to see what he sees. Gustavo, we find out, is a Rubik's Cube competitor who's not been on his game lately. Because things are spooky, he brings in a ghost hunter who sees something in his little light ritual, freaks out, and then leaves. And then later, Gustavo gets jump-scared by a talking mangled pile of corpse something, rasping, "Help me," while flopping on the floor in what is can only be described as classic Demian Rugna style.
Yeah.
It stops moving and he throws a blanket over it. He sends his sister pictures of the mangled corpse underneath the blanket. The ghost hunter then returns. He says that he found his mother dead at his nursing home after not believing that he was seeing her as an apparition in the house. Gustavo says that he turned the algorithm for solving Rubik's Cubes into light on the walls. The ghost hunter says he opened a door to death. They go look under the blanket. We see the mangled corpse with, like, the shoulder bones popped out and everything's terrible. But that doesn't seem to be what the ghost hunter is seeing. The ghost hunter is seeing his mom. He bends over and hugs the mangled corpse and is crying and is saying, "I'm sorry, mother, I love you," or whatever. So Gustavo's like, "Dude, that is not your mom," and he decides to do a reverse light ritual. It's the same ritual, but in reverse. The light, the wall, the wall, the wall, the yellow, yellow, up, down, you know, something like that. He's also got awesome windows with, like, all of the Rubik's Cube colors as panes of glass, which I thought was a nice touch.
They all vivo en el mundo de Rubik's Cube.
Good. Wow. I don't know, it's like Hellraiser, but it's a Rubik's Cube box.
Oh my god.
That's good. So he does the reverse light ritual. It makes the corpse disappear, but also splatters the ghost hunter's body all across the room. I guess the implosion of the ghost's exorcism out of this realm caused all of his guts to go everywhere. It's not explained, but pretty badass.
Pretty badass, yeah. It does expose what is a running issue with much of the film, which is the overall film, which is there's just a lot of stuff that doesn't make any fucking sense at all.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, wait, why did that? Okay, that's fine. It looked cool. Moving on.
Yeah.
Don't care. Three other segments. Let's go.
Exactly. At this point, Gustavo's sister calls. She says, "That's him," with blood on his head underneath the blanket. And oh, he's talking about like, hey, remember how Dad got his body mangled by a train? And she's like, what are you talking about? No, that's you. You're dead underneath that blanket. It's some sort of prank that you're doing. At this point, bloody-headed Gustavos come after him and something. And then later we see him. He's breathing heavy. The pizza delivery helmet is there again. He's doing the light ritual for him again. And this time, pizza helmet stares at us in the camera. And he is now smiling. The end.
Yeah, he's being... He summoned himself in ghost form, but was being fucked with by... It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
That's the important thing.
Yeah.
But it's cool. Yeah, it's very Damien Rugna. And again, the good thing about this movie is no one... I don't give a shit because I just move on to the next segment.
Yeah.
Which...
Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, that's like the saving grace. But so anyways, we're back to the traveler. Yeah, who's now told this... story that this is another one problem that I have with the movie. Like, why did he even tell that story in the first place? What connection does it have to the traveler that I don't?
Yeah,
they probably explain it. I just didn't care. Because really this movie is just like it's like a funhouse ride. Like, you know, you don't take notes on a roller coaster. Like, well, you know, about a third of the way up the hill, it was a little bumpier than it should have been. You know, like, you just don't do... It doesn't matter.
I don't think the corkscrew made sense there.
Yeah, it's just like, did I go through the corkscrew? Yes. Did I shit my pants? Yes. Maybe. Perfect. Yeah. Well, okay. Maybe not the pants shitting.
Maybe.
But, so we find out that the traveler tells them... Or we find out that his name was... As a human, was once Juan Garcia, who has survived multiple death events because he, as he explains, cannot die, as he is in fact Matlal Ihuitl Chauchiualatona, from Tenochtitlan, capital of the Aztec Empire, 542 years ago.
Hell yeah.
Okay. Yeah, why not? He tries to make a deal with the cops that, you know... that they need to let him go, and so he's gonna somehow... this ties into a vampire story is basically all I got out of it. They're like, please don't tell me that you're about to tell us a vampire story. And he's like, I'm going to tell you a vampire story. And then not in a French accent. And then we see... So we cut to a scene. There's a bunch of bloody bodies, much like the very beginning of the movie. It's a Halloween party, and we see a vampire who's doing blood shots off the bar. Turns out there's a young woman that has survived this massacre. She's hiding behind a pillar. She tries to escape, but he catches her and immediately drains her blood. This whole segment is played for like pure comedy effect, pretty much. It's not scary at all, but it is hilarious. He gets outside. He's pretty proud of himself. He gets outside and realizes that the sun is coming up, and that he's way too far from home when he gets a call from his partner of some sort that we don't really know exactly who she is yet, but her name is Maribel, and she tells him that the sun is coming up in 15 minutes, and his dumb ass got too far away from home, and now he's in deep shit. So he's like, you know, she's basically giving him hell because, you know, it's like, dude, do you not remember daylight savings? And he's like, yeah, you spring back an hour and then in the fall you fall forward. And she's like, no, you idiot. It's the other way around.
Yeah.
So it's pretty funny. And then who, by the way, he has some sort of like Tide pen that he uses to try to get the blood off of his ruffled shirt.
I love so that stupid detail.
It doesn't work at all. It's so great. So he tries to intimidate her by pulling his vampire bullshit, but she's just like, dude, shut up. And so he starts begging her for his help, for help. And, you know, he's like, she's just like not having it. You know, he's in trouble because he's just been such a dipshit. So she suggests that he turns into a bat, but he can't. It's been too long. He's too much of a fat ass. He just can't do it. So instead, he tries to pull the old, you know, you will heed my word or whatever. And she's like, shut the fuck up. It's completely doesn't work at all. So she's pissed off and hangs up on him because he's basically insulted her. I'm your master. You shall heed me or whatever. And she's like, fuck you, and hangs up. He tries really hard to become a bat, which basically is like him running down the street, dancing with his cape, trying to jump up in the air and turn into a bat. It's fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
And then some guy rides up on an electric scooter and he knocks the guy off the scooter and takes it. And he's really into the scooter. He really loves it, to the point where he's like Leonardo DiCaprio in Titanic, where he's got his arms out.
Yeah.
Like his head back with the wind blowing him. And of course he loses control and eats his shit. But it's because he's getting egged by these three douchebags in Halloween costumes. And they call him a little bitch. So he does the, he starts hissing at them and chases them into this, like, down an alley into a dead end. And then he starts hissing at them and coughing. He's just like, I'm out of shape. And then, you know, they have a little back and forth. He ends up just, like, destroying two of them. One rips his head off, and then he rips an arm off another guy. It's pretty hilarious. Then the third guy, who I think was the one in the clown costume, yeah, realizes that he's, since he realizes that the guy's an actual vampire, he rips off like a wooden spike from fence or whatever and runs it into the guy's chest. And then the vampire is like, you fool, don't you know my heart is on the left or whatever?
Yeah.
And the guy's like, oh, fuck. And then he neck drains Miho. He calls him Miho and rips his head off. And he's holding the head when cops show up and they're like, freeze. And then they come walking up and they see all the body parts. And then they, you know, he's like, I forget what he says. He's kind of confessing. And then they start laughing. And because they just assume it's like, you know, it's just from a Halloween party or something. And they're like, this is so fake. Like the one guy lifts up the arm and he's like, I mean, look at this fucking thing. It's fake as hell. And then the other guy's like, look at this blood. What'd you use, Karo syrup? And then he tastes it and he's like, ooh.
Yeah.
And then they pull their guns and, you know, then now they're having like a standoff. And it's fucking brilliant because then he starts doing the whole, he turns to one, you're in my command. And then the guy like kind of like goes unconscious sort of. And then the other guy has got his gun on him, so he goes to that guy. You're in my command. And he just goes, you're in my command. No, you're in my, like, because he can't do it to both of them at the same time for some reason. So he's only, he's hypnotizing them one after the other really fast. And finally, he just is like, you know, he's like, hijo de puta, and gets the fuck out of there. He, now he's on the run. They're chasing him. He stops, hides somewhere behind a wall, whips the stake out of his chest. Ends up getting cornered by a whole bunch of cops, and he like dips into this building to try to hide. Turns out he's in a church, so he starts getting toasted and like runs out the door. He's on fire, like rolls himself out, sees the sun is now rising, and you know it's not going to be long now. So he's frantically calling Mirabelle, freaking out. The cops are swarming, and then all of a sudden a car pulls up and it's Mirabelle. So he jumps in. And they take off, and then they start bickering like children, just basically like sniping at each other and stuff. And as they're driving back, you know, she's giving him a hard time because he's a moron, and he's trying to, you know, defend himself, but it's not working. It's just, it's kind of funny. They get caught in traffic, like morning traffic. And so they have to get out of the car and run, and they can't get very far because the sun's coming up. And so they run down an alley and jump into a dumpster and then, you know, say lovely things to each other. And I'm sorry, I was such a douche and all that kind of stuff. And then it was a good run and all that like kind of crap. And then they get completely fried by the sun that starts coming in through the cracks of the dumpster. A dude taking out his trash in the morning walks over to the dumpster, lifts the lid up, and is startled to see two charred skeletons, one with a pretty cool looking snake ring on its finger, and he says, fucking Halloween, and that's the end of that segment. And it was funny. It was a good segment.
I keep every time I watched it, like, yeah, that snake ring really, like, popped out of the screen at you on their skeletons, but I don't remember seeing it anywhere in the rest of the movie. I feel like that was, like, something was filmed out of sequence there.
Yeah, that could be. That makes sense. Because, yeah, because they pan down and it's just skeleton all the way down, but then all of a sudden there's this real big, like, bejeweled snake ring, and there's no explanation, whatever. It's like, okay, cool. Yeah. That's cool. Cool
it's ring. Fine. Back to the frame narrative. At this point, the detectives pull out a bag of charms, and it's like all of his little magical trinkets that he has, which feels like that would be the actual center of the frame narrative is him. Oh yeah, no, I got this one from a guy over here. But for some reason, that doesn't come into play until halfway through this. There's a human finger amongst the charms, but no one comments on it. Instead, what they find of particular interest is a vial of blood, and they're like, oh yeah, well, where'd you get this one? He's like, yeah, these are my relics, they're my things, and so he proceeds to tell the story of how he came by the vial of blood. Go into the third segment. No, the Nahuales? Los Nahuales.
Yeah.
Yeah. We are introduced visually to a dude walking through the wilderness on a horse with a corpse. He's just getting this corpse somewhere until he arrives at a ranch. Kind of fancy ranch.
Hopping through the woods on a horse with a corpse.
Yes, that's exactly what's going on. he gets there, he drags the body inside. We see that someone is watching him from behind the banana tree. There's like one banana tree, which, okay.
Sure.
And then he gets on a cell phone call with a CIA agent who needs all of his personal information to sign him up for a CIA informant account, I guess. I don't know. But it turns out that he's going to be ratting on some kind of political figure so that the CIA can overthrow the government. Okay. He's all nervous. He has a sawed-off double-barrel shotgun that he keeps like, and there's obviously dudes all up in his house. Then he gets abducted by said dudes. They all have dirty teeth, and they growl talk. And they're like, all right, well, we're gonna deliver you to Mother. Skip forward. He's now in the rainforest, in the middle of a sacred circle. He's being yoinked in half by the dudes who are now covered in mud and are just kind of yoinking on his arms. Mother is some kind of badass witch lady, Nahuales. She's talking about the Olmecs and how cool it is to be the Nahuales, and he calls them disgusting animals. She talks about the earth being poisoned by jealousy, how government is bad, and how one must be respectful when waking one's animal spirit. She then cuts his neck open with a tiny, tiny spear. Then she does a herky-jerky dance, rips her cheeks off, and reveals her true face, the Grinch who stole Navidad.
Whoa.
And so the mud dudes are just like jittering, and he's all dead. She has a vial of blood on a necklace, and she then, as the Grinch who stole Navidad, opens it up and chugs it like it's a little really cool 5-hour energy. And then all of a sudden they're somewhere else. Her and the three mud dudes are in a house. They've found assassinated bodies hidden behind a wall. And they're talking about how the government will pay. And then they sing the song of their people. And then the camera is taken to a waterfall.
Yeah, I was just like, what is going on with this sketch? Every time I watched it, it did not become any clearer.
No, no. I mean, I get what they're going for, but this is literally like at the early stages of when you're writing something, you're like, all right, here's the like key moments. Here's the points I want to get across. Here's the ideas I want to play with. Here are some like dream board visuals I have up. But this is just that all smashed together and into the final product, without the actual like connective tissue of work that has to be put in to make a story happen. It's very strange.
It is. I mean, like the guy's like begging the CIA at the beginning of the segment, you know, to come rescue him, and how they're going to have to do it immediately. And, you know, they're stonewalling and stuff. And like through that whole bit, I'm waiting for them to suddenly show up and start shooting everyone. But it never happens. It's just, I don't know. That segment, yeah, I agree. I mean, it felt half-baked, I thought.
Yeah, yeah. It's a good idea for a full story, but it's not a full story at all.
No. And I felt like the Nahuales lady or whatever, I couldn't pay attention to her. I was too busy looking at her contact lens and dirty teeth, you know? And she's just like, "And you shall perish in the river of blood." I'm just like,
yeah,
shut the fuck up, lady. God damn. Like,
yeah,
you, no one cares what you're saying except that one dude who's like vibrating for no reason, and the other guys aren't vibrating. The whole thing was weird. I don't know.
Yeah, everyone in this movie brushed with graphite that morning.
Jesus Christ. And I read a segment of an interview with her, and the guy was like, "You really like to put people with dirty teeth in your movies. What's that about?" So apparently it's a thing with her.
Nice.
Yeah. So we're back at the police station, and the cops ask the traveler about this little musket ball looking bullet, they call it, that he has from his trinkets. He starts telling this ridiculous story about how he once had a wife and child, that they were chosen to be sacrificed by something evil or whatever. So he made a deal to exchange their lives for his so that they could continue to live. What a selfless gesture.
Nice.
And it was with not Santa Muerte, but San La Muerte, which is different because it's Colombian or something, and I don't care.
Oh.
So then he runs away, cheating death. But now he's permanently on the run, and San La Muerte is going to chase him throughout El Mundo. So the fat lady cop leaves because she's got a headache and she needs to get an aspirin. And so she goes into the file room and opens up a filing cabinet, pulls out a plastic bag, which has an old school pirate looking handgun in it. Obviously goes with the bullet that the traveler has. Great.
Good.
What the fuck ever. Back in the room, she arrives back in the room, asks what it says on the bullet, because she notices something's inscribed, and he says, "Saint Killer." So, okay, great. And it does, again, does not use a French accent. But it says Saint Killer on the bullet. And then he decides that to explain this, even though it doesn't make any sense why, I guess he's trying to convince them. I don't know what the fuck. It doesn't matter. He decides to tell them the story of Malcolm, So, okay, we cut to Malcolm. Malcolm meets up with his ex, as it turns out, for dinner at what was their, you know, favorite spot, or his favorite restaurant. It was where they met originally for their first date. Great. She's asking him, "Where's all your buddies? Aren't they joining?" And he says, "No, they all died in Havana. But, you know, some of the people survived." So it's like, well, they're either dead or they survived, but that's fine. So some of them survived, didn't come to the dinner. Rude. But that they're cursed. And then he tells her that they had seen a ceremony of some sort that they shouldn't have. He made an audio recording of it on the probably one of those old school, whatever, that doesn't matter either. but that something, they awoke something, and that it's coming for all of them until they're all dead. She's like, you're fucking crazy. And then he busts out a photo of him and his, all his buddies, and tells her, based on the photo, how each of them died. Like, because of, like, one lady has her hair to one side of her head, and he's like, the demon of wind blew her to hell, murder, or whatever. He's like, he has like some stupid explanation for each of their deaths that I didn't care about.
Yeah.
Then she says, well, why don't you give me the recording so that I can destroy it? And he says, I tried that already, but, you know, I shoved it up my ass, and then I shit it in a sewer, and then I set the sewer on fire, and then I fucked a dog, and then, you know, whatever. And but the tape keeps coming back. I can't get rid of it. So he's now afraid that the recording is going to, you know, spur this evil thing to get out and fuck the entire planet. she quote unquote realizes that, that means that one of the two of them is possessed, because they're the only two left or something. It's really dumb. And, then she literally realizes that, he knows that it's her, because he knows it's not him. Duh. So, the whole dinner was a setup. He set her up, but he believes that the rest, it's so dumb. So anyways, now the cat is out of the bag, and the whole situation goes south pretty quickly. She pulls a little hand, like, whoosh, and then turns out they're in a closed down version of the restaurant, which he had mentioned earlier that the restaurant was closed. That's how he knew. I guess that's what it was. That's how he knew she was scamming him, because the restaurant was closed. I don't know. So now they're in this restaurant. He tells her about his secret plan, and then whips out a shotgun under the table. That's his secret plan, and shoots her with it. And she falls to the ground. He shoots her several more times, and then she falls, and then she gets back up, and he shoots her some more. He busts out double Uzis and shoots her with those, and then she starts levitating. She's all bloody, full of bullet holes, and she starts coming towards him, levitating, basically just hovering above the ground. He runs, she catches up with him, they struggle, they have a little fight. He pulls out a handgun and unloads a bunch of shells into her from that, or a bunch of bullets, whatever. She's now in demon form, so she looks like the aliens from that TV series V in the 80s. I mean, it's a really bad costume. Yeah. She looks really stupid. And she's supposed to be like the zombie god or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't even care. In his panic to get away, or as he's backing away, he drops the tape recorder, and she gets a hold of it and plays it. You know, announcing her plan to take over the world with her demon army, or her zombie army, or whatever the fuck. And then all of a sudden he whips out this weapon and clubs her in the head with it. Turns out it's the Hammer of Zanzibar, which looks, I don't think they show you what it looks like yet. He just hits her with it. So we cut to Malcolm and his buddy, one of his buddies. They're at this oddity museum. They ask the guy behind the counter, who is wants to be referred to as El Jefe, that they tell him that they need something to defend themselves against evil. And the guy's like, oh, is it a demon? And they're like, no, worse. Oh, is it the devil? And the guy's like, take it down a notch. And so they have a little, that whole situation. And then it turns out it's some sort of evil force from Cuba. The Jefe tells them, let me tell you this story. We don't really have time for a story. Once upon a time, like, he just goes right into the story. It's pretty fucking awesome. The El Jefe is hilarious.
Yes.
So we hear about how he's backpacking the globe, and he finds himself in Zanzibar, and hears about the Popo Bawa, a demon that he decides to summon. So he summons the demon, who shows up, pins him down and penetrates him.
Yes.
And he keeps talking about how he was so far inside of me, and he's like, just, it just goes into great detail, and the other guys are like, okay, that's all right. Yeah, you don't have to. All right.
Yeah,
that's wonderful.
Oh, it keeps going.
And then he says, he keeps going on and on. He talks about how he was penetrated like a rainbow exploded inside of me. And then the creature leaves, and he talks about how he's sitting there with his demonic residue inside of him, and he's all contented, how wonderful it is. And so he summons him again for 19 nights in a row, where the creature repeatedly digs into him night after night. And these guys are just like, oh, dude, okay, all right, come on. Look, what? Jesus Christ. He talks more and more about, you know, like being like seduced or whatever by the demon thing. But then one day the demon stops coming over, and he's upset. So he starts altering his summoning practices so he can get what he's now calling the popo back. He even goes so far as to sacrifice his beloved bird. Finally, Popo does in fact return. But now Popo is behaving very cold and distant and kind of grumpy, just seems to be, you know, like has other things on its mind, and tells him that, you know, I just think things are moving too fast, which I thought was fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
Hefe is now, he discovers that the Popo is seducing all the Cuban dudes who summon it and who summon him. And so he's really upset about this. He's deeply offended because he thought he was special. And so while the Popo sleeps, he busts out a huge knife and tells the guys that he, you know, badly injures the Popo. The demon gets up and gets the fuck out of there because he's injured. But he leaves behind a giant weapon, which the guy opens this big case to show him, and it's the Hammer of Zanzibar, which is a gigantic wooden looking dick with a huge curve in it. It's like 2 feet long. It's like a scimitar penis.
It's awesome.
It's so cool. It's easily the coolest part of the movie. It's so funny. And then he tells them that, you know, like, they're just like, what the fuck is that? And he's telling them how powerful it is. And he says that if Satan attacked them, the hammer would fuck him for eternity. It's so good. And then all of a sudden we find out that Miguel, Malcolm's friend, is actually possessed. So they have a little fight, and Miguel is like yelling at him in the demon voice, "We'll fuck your mother's heart. We'll fuck your mother's heart." It just keeps saying it over and over, and all of a sudden, bash.
Yep.
Hefe completely destroys his head with the Hammer of Zanzibar.
That head explosion is magnificent, too.
It's so good. Back to Miguel. What is it? No, not Miguel. Malcolm and the let's see, what was it? Back to Malcolm and the demon creature in the restaurant, and the she says, I forget what she says, and he says, "Let's get hammered." It's so stupid. And he like holds up the thing and does the Bruce Lee hand thing, and then they fight to a ridiculous punk song called "I'm Gonna Kill You," which is actually pretty funny. So it's like, "I'm gonna kill you." He beats the monster like to a pulp with the giant dick hammer. And then right before the demon like runs away or whatever, snaps back to hell, it says to him, "I'll see you in hell." And Malcolm says, "Tell them hell's coming for you." And the demon's like, that doesn't make any sense. And then he just totally brains the demon with the giant dick. It's fantastic. It's like, that doesn't even make sense. Bash.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, Malcolm is back in the restaurant. It's like an actual restaurant again. All the lights are on. Everything's normal. It's not all filthy and shut down. But all the patrons are dead. And he's standing there holding the Hammer of Zanzibar. And the place is actually under raid by the cops because of, you know, the reports of violence, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
He lifts up the giant dick and is like, look, it's not a weapon, and gets tackled. And that's the end of that bit. We go back to the station. The cops are pretty much just done with the Traveler's bullshit. And then all of a sudden the lights flicker. And in the station, into the station walks the cowboy demon who, like,
yeah,
like he's all dressed in black with his like black duster and a flat brim cowboy hat and weird like monster face. It's pretty cool looking, actually.
Yeah.
It's all slow-mo. He's walking through, you know, pointing at people, and when he does that, like, the cop will stand up and shoot everyone else and then shoot himself, and, you know, and then he's waving his hand and people are flying or whatever. It's just complete carnage, making them all kill each other to like very dramatic slow-mo music. Travis Bickle warns the detectives, don't look him in the eyes. And then we see more station carnage.
Yeah.
The detectives run out there and then they run back. And that's when the Traveler says, if you want to stop it, you need to use the Saint Killer, the stupid gun.
Yeah.
So they take the gun and go off, and there's more cops shooting. And like suddenly the cops are all shooting at this creature and hitting it in the chest, and there's like dust and smoke flying everywhere, and it's looks like it's got this outer shell that's like falling away, and eventually it's revealed to be San La Muerte, a really fucking badass looking monster.
Yes.
like, this is so cool looking. And of course, now that its final form is revealed or whatever, it completely annihilates the entire cop station.
Yep.
Traveler gets a hold of the gun.
Travis!
Busts out. Travis gets the gun, busts out of the back, and is facing Muerte down, says some prayer shit, and then shoots him. The creature, at first I thought he was gonna miss, which I thought was,
yeah, it's veering off to the left there. I'm like, uh-oh.
Yeah, he kind of just like hits him in the shoulder, but anyways, the thing turns into black dust and we hear this horrible scream and it basically just kind of vanishes. And then he says, we hear him say, like, in his mind, I think it is, like, he'll be back, he's always coming for me. And then we get this speech about how sometimes there are, in the world, there are creatures who defy imagination, and that I must travel on. And then it gets pulled over by another cop.
Yeah.
And the cop's like, why such a hurry? And he says, because if I don't get out of here in the next 90 minutes, you're all going to die. Movie over. And you get credit sequence with happy celebratory music. And then at the very end, I noticed there was a line that went up the crawl that said, no Latinos were harmed in the making of this motion picture.
Nice.
Nice little gag at the end. A simple film, a pretty much zero budget film, but it was fun. I enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty funny. It had some low points, particularly, unfortunately, Nahualis. Yeah. I could have done without that entire segment. And the rest of it was fine. And I wasn't a huge fan of the Damien Rugna segment either, which I thought was kind of a weird way to,
oh really,
kick it off. Yeah. I think it was good. It was definitely better than Nahualis. The last one had its issues too, but it was funny. The vampire one, for me, even though it was goofy, was probably the most well put together one. I don't know why. I think just because the comedic timing and the delivery of the guy playing the vampire was just great. He just did such a good job for me. But
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, overall, you know, I didn't, it's not that I disliked the Rugna bit, but I definitely liked it less than Terrified or,
yeah,
you know, When Evil Lurks. So, but I don't know. It was still a cool little movie. And definitely a digestif after, yes, after that triple lobed, well, double lobed turd that we covered.
Yeah.
In the previous two episodes.
Yeah. Yeah. I think El Vampiro is like the winner of these four. Like, just on the strength of his acting, like that segment where he's like running and bouncing with his hands holding the cape and flapping the cape mm-hmm. like wings was really funny. And then like the state of bliss that he was in on the scooter, like, oh yeah, this is what it was like to fly. And then at the end, it was also like kind of touching when they're in the dumpster and expressing their love for each other as they're about to be burnt by the sun. I was like, this is actually like pretty good. It also had, it reminded me, probably because of like the cops and the body parts, it kind of reminded mm-hmm. me of Terrifier, like not in like the tone, but in the visual styling and a little bit of the sense of humor. I was like, yeah, this is nice.
It definitely has, I wasn't really sure. Yeah, you're right, it did kind of have that feel to it.
Yeah, and I don't like vampire things. Like, I
don't care. I couldn't care either way, really. Yeah. It's certainly not my thing, you know?
Yeah, it's not my thing, but I was like, yeah, this is quickly up, climbed the ranks of good vampire business for me.
Yeah, the idea to make it funny definitely helped. And the guy's performance, one of the things I liked about that segment so much was that he does play him as a bumbling idiot, but he's a vampire. And when he kicks on the vampire-ness, he completely just annihilates anybody that gets in his way, which I thought was great, because you just expect him to bumble himself his way through everything. But, you know, at times he's actually pretty dangerous. He's not scary at all, but he's definitely dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really good. The Rugnub one, I enjoyed it. It was a cool idea, but yeah, it kind of like fizzled at the end with like the reveal and then the what the hell is even happening. So yeah, I think after going through it, I think you're right. I think Vampiro is the winner of these four.
From what I understand, none of the directors wrote their segments. And so, like, I know for sure that Rugna did not, because he was given the idea for their, you know, he was given basically the story and, you know, he just interpreted it. And as far as I know, I didn't see in the credits, you know, anybody but Mendez and two other people, I think, that did all the writing. So that was all their ideas. And then they just recruited people, I think, that they thought would, you know, would do a good job. I mean, as we were talking about the vampire, like, I'm curious to see Eduardo Sanchez do more with humor, because, you know, I mean, yeah, we've seen him do horror, obviously, with Blair Witch. And Blair Witch does have some dark humor in it, but
yeah.
I don't know. Then again, I mean, 90 minutes or more of El Vampiro would probably be intolerable.
Ooh, yeah. Like, I even got tired of What We Do in the Shadows as a TV series. Like, after a while, it's like, yeah, I don't feel up for another episode of this.
Yeah. I mean, it was the movie was great.
Yeah.
And I started the series and immediately was not interested and stopped watching it.
Yeah.
To be fair, I really didn't give it much of a chance, but I didn't like it from the start. So I was like, fuck it. I don't want to, like, the movie was great. I could watch that movie a million times and pretty much have.
Yeah.
Yeah. And nothing in this movie was at that level. I mean, you know, but still, I thought it was a cool little movie. And I was surprised, you know, like, because I had seen the trailer. I think I mentioned in the previous episode, but I had seen the trailer for it. Expecting it to be terrible, because it had come up in a previous episode, you know, in somebody's credits, it said, you know, Satanic Hispanics, which I thought was hilarious. And then all of a sudden I saw the trailer pop up, and so I watched it. I was like, wow, this is actually pretty funny. I actually want to see this movie. And then when it showed up on Shudder, I actually watched it and liked it.
Yeah.
So, oh, okay.
Surprise.
Go figure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't see that coming.
Yeah, the title is funny, but it also, like, if you don't know, then it's like, yeah, I bet this is going to be put on by a bunch of white people and it's not going to be great. And then it's like, oh, actually, like, Latinos, like, the were behind every, you know, decision and the making of this. And it really shows way better than it would have the other way that I'd assumed it would be. So, yeah, overall, it was really great. Just get Jonah Ray out of here, and this would be a masterpiece.
I Yeah, it's weird. Like the idea of the Nahuale character, yeah, or the idea of actually using, you know, Mexican, I don't know if you'd call it folk history, because that's kind of denigrating it, but you know, Mexican cultural history. I guess it's folk history, right?
I mean, it's an actual like folk religion. Like I don't know if it's like they're living practitioners of it, probably, but it's like in there, and I like the idea of it, you know, like pulling back from our ancestry to throw out all of the various evils that are currently plaguing the country. Like, that's rad. I love the idea of that, but the execution of the actual presenting it was bad.
Yeah, like I thought we were supposed to like that character, even though he wasn't particularly likable, but he's, you know, his wife and kid were killed, and his whole family was killed, you know, so he's upset about that, and I get it. He's desperate to get the fuck out of there, and then these weird, like, zombie-ish dudes show up, and, you know, and then she shows up, and she's actually kind of a cool character, even though I couldn't stand to listen to her, but, you know, and then it just kind of grinds itself into the ground. Like, when she was giving her explanation about, you know, like, just all that crap, I could not listen to her. I just did not care, yeah, at all. Even for the episode, I was just kind of like half looking, you know, like when I was taking my notes, because I was like, ah, this isn't my segment. So
yeah. It was like, yes. Yeah.
I've already seen this.
It's one that I could see that making a really good, like, full-length film if they, like, flesh, yeah, out the ideas and, like, watch it, like, we get to watch it unfold from there. I would love for this to have been the beginning of a movie that then unfolds and we watch, like, the Nahuales, like, wreak havoc with, like, the corruption of local, yeah, and American influence in you know, yeah, whatever. That would be badass. But where it stands, where it's like, all right, and a waterfall, it's like, no, what are you doing? Why are we here?
Yeah, actually, you know, it's funny. Maybe, I guess part of the problem was that when you were saying that, it made me think that of all the segments, that's the one segment that could probably stand to be made into a feature.
Yeah.
You know, where it wouldn't suffer being made a feature. Whereas all the other ones, I think, were worked as well as they did, partially because they were short. And even the framing narrative, which was, you know, kind of silly,
yeah,
worked fine. And it was very brief. And it was entertaining, even though it didn't make a lot of sense, but it didn't matter. So, yeah, it's like, I think the Nahuales one was kind of the odd man out, just because it was just out of place in a lot of ways. Because, yeah, you're right. There's a lot of shit going on there with the CIA thing and the family's killed. And, you know, why does she... I don't know. There was a lot to chew on. And
yeah,
they just didn't... You just can't do all that in 20 minutes or whatever it was. 25 minutes or...
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the others worked because there was a complete story. We like there, yeah, was it wrapped around and it, you know, had an ending. And this one didn't. This one was just the presentation of themes and ideas and like a small showcase of special effects. And that was it. It was more like a pitch for a movie rather than actually a short film.
Yeah, from like a writing standpoint, you know, if you think about what is going on in each segment, like if you're a writer and you want to try to write that first segment, it's a pretty clunky thing to write, you know. But when you're like thinking about the vampire one, it's like, how about a bumbling vampire who is caught out and, you know, his vampire lady is scolding him and then just see what happens. And that's basically it. That's the whole sketch. And that's perfectly fine because of the way it's acted and, you know, all that stuff, it works. And then with that Nahuales one, it's like, how about a CIA conspiracy thing with folk gods and weird mud dudes? And like, it's just way too much stuff to cram into 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. Same, kind of the same with, I mean, and then there's the Hammer of Zanzibar, which is like funny, but anything more than it would probably just be really boring. It'd just be tedious.
Yeah, yeah. And I love that that Hefe like stole the whole show. Like it's just like there's this whole thing, and they even did it. I think that's part of why they ended up doing like a flashback in the middle instead of doing it in sequential order, is they were like, oh well, no, here's the centerpiece is him telling the story of his relationship with this demon and how it progressed, and it's just. It's spectacular. Like it's yeah. Yeah. It's so good. I do like the way that they laid out this movie where you've got one serious, not funny, like more horror segment followed by a comedy horror segment and then a horror. And they did a good job of it. And I dig it. It's a really good anthology film. If that's what you're into, this is going to be a good one for you.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the better anthologies that I've seen, including, if I remember correctly, Tales of Halloween, which Mike Mendez was involved in as well. I think he had a segment in that, but that one was okay, you know, but it didn't really leave much of an impression, whereas this one was, it's definitely original.
Yeah.
Even if it's not like, you know, like earth-shattering or whatever, it definitely brought something that I've never seen before to the table, you know, and so yeah I enjoyed it.
I gave it a 3.8 out of 5 loathsome things. It's solid, it's really enjoyable at times, sometimes it's confusing, but it's not like, it's the perfect kind of thing to find on like Plex or the Roku channel and just have yourself a nice little watch. It's not like pushing up into masterpiece area, but it's not far away.
Yeah, that's true. using the loathsome thing scale, I give it a 4.09, which I guess is relatively close to yours. I rated it really high as far as enjoyability, which is one of my things. I liked the acting for the most part. I mean, there were some wonky performances, but overall I liked it. It's definitely a horror film. The atmosphere is kind of shit.
Yeah,
the settings weren't so great. The production values were really bad. The writing was decent, and the effects were pretty good.
Yeah.
So I mean, overall, I think, yeah, it works. But like you said, I mean, yeah, if we're basing it entirely on Nahualis, that's going to get a much lower.
Oof.
I'm sorry.
But yeah.
Yeah, I just did not care for that segment.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's a 7.89 out of 10 loathsome things. That feels about right. That's, you know, like, way up there. It's if you're, you know, scrolling across a slider looking for something to watch, and this comes up, it's definitely like, oh yeah, watch this and have a good time.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't like one of the segments, I guess, you know, you should just go to the next one. So there's that.
Yeah.
There, I guess we can move on to what we might perhaps be covering in the next episode.
Oh, whatever may that be. It is, in a few days, Civil War is going to come out. It's very exciting. Mm. It's going to be in theaters, and I don't know about you, John, but I don't want to go see that movie in the theaters, so I'm just not going to do that. And there's no, they haven't said when it's going to be available on, like, video on demand, so that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be like, let's review Civil War. But since I don't know if we're going to have access to it, and I'm not going to go to a movie theater to watch it, I'm not going to do that. So instead, I'm going to, we're gonna early up the month just a smidge. It's going to be coming out a few days before it's actually accurate, but we're going to be watching Lucky McKee's 2002 masterpiece, May.
Funny. Yeah, interesting. A good choice. A good choice. That's a fine film.
Yeah. Yeah. It's starring Angela Bettis, who this podcast knows as the middle Carrie.
Yeah, the Carrie, the meat of the Carrie sandwich.
Yes.
Oh my god.
Yeah, yeah. That is that's how I would pronounce it too. Yeah. that original masterpiece is just a slice of bread whenever it comes down to it.
My God. Angela Bettis is fucking great. And Lucky McKee is pretty cool, too. So that's going to be a fun one.
We've talked about the movie often and a lot on this show, but we've never actually reviewed it. So I figured it's time to put that one to bed.
That's going to be that'll be a good one. Yeah, good idea. Nice selection. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. So go out there, watch it. I'm sure it's available in all kinds of places. It's really good. It's a little, there's not a lot of content warnings, but it is a body horror film. There's some parts that might be squirmy, but you'll be fine. You'll be fine. Just go for it. It's so good.
If you saw Jughead, it's, if you can handle Jughead, you can handle Bay.
Yeah.
That reminds me of it.
You've seen Buckethead. You're fine.
You've watched Buckethead in concert. You can do anything.
You read Archie comics. It's fine.
You like Kentucky Fried Chicken. It's fine.
Yeah, you like Insane Clown Posse. Magnets? What? It's gonna be okay.
How do they work? So tune in. Yeah, tune in 2 weeks where we are going to talk about Lucky McKee's masterpiece-ish.
Yeah.
May. And then in the meantime, as our good friend the Traveler says, you're all going to die.